Arguments, and before I call the first case, I want to welcome with us the Notre Dame High School students. They are here with our Court with Class program that we run with the State Bar. And this is a program that has won 2 national awards. The students, have received materials on the cases. You may have discussed the cases in class, and then at noon, you will meet with Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. You will be joined by the Hillsborough High School students at that time, too. So, would the Notre Dame High School students please stand so we can see you? Well, welcome, and we hope that you find this enjoyable and informative. Please be seated. I would now like to introduce the court to all of you. On my far right is Justice Patrick Crooks. To his left is Justice John Wilcox. To my immediate right is Justice Donald Steinmetz. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my left is Justice William Babbage. And to his left, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. And to her left, Justice David Prosser. So with the introductions made, I'll call the first case, 97-1651, City of Sun Prairie versus William D. Davis. Stephen Mays represents Mr. Davis.
May it please the court. My name is Stephen Mays, and I represent Mr. William Davis, the petitioner in this matter. The issue presented to this court is the power of a municipal court to enter a default judgment against a civil litigant who appeared for trial by one of the 2 permissible manners allowed by statute. More specifically, the issue is whether a municipal court has the power, inherent or otherwise, to enter an order in direct contravention of an existing statute. A civil litigant has the right to appear at his or her own municipal trial. A civil litigant also has the right to have that proceeding handled by an attorney. In Wisconsin, that is a state constitutional right. In municipal court, this is an express statutory rule of procedure. The point is put explicitly in Chapter 800, where the term appear is used by statute to describe the right of the litigant to appear in person or by an attorney. 800.09 sub 2 sub b is clear and explicit. If the person charged fails to appear personally or by an attorney at the time fixed for the hearing of the case, the defendant may be deemed to have entered a plea of no contest.
Counsel, if I can interrupt for a moment, I guess I'm concerned about the order of your argument. Would you agree or disagree that if the court has inherent authority to do what it did, then it doesn't matter what the statute says? Or do you say that the statute can trump inherent authority?
I would first address the inherent authority part of your Honor's question. If what is sought, in this case, the order to be issued, the court has determined that it must be an essential function to the existence of the court. So before we reach the question of whether or not the statute permits that, in looking at the inherent authority, it's got to be essential to the existence of the court.
I don't think either. I probably inartfully stated the question. If we should hold that the court, municipal court, has the inherent authority to do what it did, then does it matter what the statute says, or can the statute trump the inherent authority?
No. To answer your question, the latter part of your question first, that if the court determines that it's got the inherent authority, then we turn to the issue of the separation of powers, whether or not the court can act in direct contravention to what the statute permits.
No, sir. Okay. Well, same vein, let's talk about the essential what we're talking about. We're talking about a case that from start to finish took approximately 225 days. There were a variety of correspondences back and forth that I'll just avoid discussing, but come up to the final trial date. Now, your client received a trial date, and in that notice, it said that we require that the defendant be present. And then the court talked about the reason why, and I think it sort of includes some common sense, why at a trial of your client, the court, being the municipal court, would want the defendant to be there so that he would be subjected to questions, he could answer some questions, etc., and then there would be a result of that trial. Do you feel that the defendant, or strike that, do you feel that the court, feeling that it was essential that a defendant be present at a trial, that that's not an essential area? You said if it was essential.
Your Honor, I feel that the Sun Prairie Municipal Court, in determining through its order and listing the five criteria, yes, for why it is, was in error in determining that those indicate that the defendant's appearance is essential, and I'd be happy to address each one of those that is contained in the order. The first one, that the first purpose or justification for the municipal court's order is that it, quote-unquote, promotes prompt justice. In that, the court stated that when a defendant does not appear, oftentimes they can't put questions directly to the court. In addition, on that first promotes prompt justice, they claim that if the defendant is present, then the court, the defendant's attorney, the prosecutor will always have knowledge of the facts as they can come from the defendant. My response to that, Your Honor, is that any defendant who has given their attorney the authorization to appear on their behalf implicitly has that authority to act on their behalf. And I'll cite an example. They've claimed that oftentimes the defendant's counsel won't have knowledge of the facts and won't be willing or have the consent to enter into trial stipulations. Again, my response is that inherent in the authority of the defendant's attorney to act on the defendant's behalf is the consent to enter into such trial stipulations and other things of that nature.
And if they don't, I suppose you could have a default judgment.
I guess I've never thought about that question. If they don't,
or a directed judgment.
I suppose that's available, Your Honor. But I guess I'm assuming, at least at this point, that most attorneys that are going to be appearing on their client's behalf are going to be prepared, are going to have spoken with them, are going to have the knowledge that their client has given them to appear on their behalf, to represent their interests.
I guess I don't understand this case. You don't have to come at all. You can default, right?
Correct.
You don't have to go with a lawyer. You don't. And if you don't show up in a municipal court and judgment is entered against you, can you go to circuit court and seek review?
Yes.
De novo? Okay. So, and the judge can't order you in.
I'm sorry?
And if you don't show up at all and your lawyer doesn't show up, can the judge order you in? Or is that what this case is about?
I think that this case is somewhat about that issue.
Okay. I have an easier time outside a municipal court because I know a little bit more about circuit court than I do about municipal, but it would seem to me if a municipal court has inherent power to order in a defendant, so does the circuit court.
I need to separate those two. You need to answer the question first, whether or not any court has the inherent power to do that.
All right. So, where does the court get the power to say to a defendant, you have to come in, when the defendant has a right to default? We're talking about a civil case. Defendant has a right to default. And if the other side wants the defendant's testimony, what does the other side do?
As in any other case, they subpoena the person.
So if you want him there, and you're the opposing party, you can bring him in and you can question him.
Exactly.
As an adverse witness.
Exactly. Actually,
as well, what if he lives out of state?
Pardon?
What if he lives out of state?
It's an interesting...
As in this case.
It's an interesting question. I didn't delve too much into that because I wanted the court to focus rather than on this particular person on the rights. But I believe that there is a provision which allows the intrastate or interstate subpoenaing. Again, I didn't focus too much on that. I didn't research, so I'm not able to cite that to you.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Justice.
Sorry. Not a problem. But they can subpoena them. 80507 of the Wisconsin statutes says in municipal courts, subpoena shall be issued in accordance with 885. 885.04 states that municipal judges must issue them. Once the municipal judge issues the subpoena, 885.03 permits anyone to serve it. So that's not at issue in this case, with all due respect. They could have done it, and without doing it, seeking the court to issue this order is institutionalized cheapness. They could have done it, they didn't.
What do you mean, institutionalized cheapness?
By requesting a court issue what I'm claiming is an unlawful order, they're then asking the court to bring the defendant before the court so it can question without having to pay witness fees and everything else as required by subpoenas.
That's sort of that. Judge Dykeman's dissent in part. He doesn't use the term institutional cheapness, but he suggests that it makes the judge issuing an order of appearance less than neutral, benefiting
exactly. And
prosecutor, that's what he was saying.
And Justice Dykeman's quote was, by issuing the order for appearance, the municipal court gives the appearance of favoring the municipality. A court should be a neutral dispenser of justice. This is the second and third of the court's five purposes or justifications. The court stated that it often has questions that it wants to pose to the defendant, and it can't do that if the person's not there. But any reliance by the city in this case on Summers versus Friedman is misplaced, because in Summers the court was asking questions that were being relayed by jurors. Now, I'm not disputing, and I would concede, that courts have the ability to ask questions. It's something that is, I think, a power that they have. In fact, by 906.14, I believe it is, sub 2, they have the ability to do that. However, and there's a fine distinction here, when the court cites that as a purpose for issuing an order, claiming it to be an inherent power, it must be essential to the existence of the court. That's the Brownsdorf case, which was cited by Justice Dykeman at length in his somewhat short dissent.
Well, how about, I think, the last reason, which was essentially, I think it was the last reason the municipal judge gave, is, hey, look, you're abusing the process. You're misusing the municipal court. You're making this nothing more than a trial run, if you will, for the circuit court, and I'm not going to allow that. What's wrong with the municipal judge doing that and requiring that there be a presence of the defendant in order to maintain the integrity of the municipal court?
That's the paranoia that I refer to in my briefs. That's nothing different than the 814 permits. No matter who loses, no matter why they lose, no matter what happens during the loss, the loser can appeal it and virtually eliminate the purpose of a municipal court. So the judge has no authority after that. And my position is, municipal courts are not dry runs. Municipal courts are not for discovery purposes only. The city cites in their briefs that it's the goal of the municipal court defendant to go in, not appearing in person, cross-examine, and then appeal, hope to lose, and then appeal. That's absurd, that I'm going to go into a court anywhere and hope to lose to simply make a record. Well, I've lost.
Why is that absurd?
It borders on legal malpractice to go into court and try and lose. I'm not representing the interests of my client.
Well, but if your interest of your client may be discovery that you can't get any other way, that's fine. So you lose. You get a de novo. But that's the way this whole thing is set up by the legislature. It allows you to do that.
But, Your Honor, I'm giving municipal court more credit than the city is. I think municipal court judges are vital. I think cases can be won at municipal court. I want to win a case at municipal court. I don't want to appeal it. It costs the defendant more money. It's more time for me to appeal it. It brings me to situations like this.
Well, you go in with two goals. One is to win, and the alternative, to get a lot of discovery. I mean, that's fact,
also,
right?
Isn't there also delay?
Well, it could be delay. Yeah.
And I think to find otherwise... Yeah, that's the nature
of it. I don't. Right. The Chief Justice, I think, was feeding you one there, counsel. I mean, this is the way the statutory setup is. What I want to ask you is, assuming that they, at least as I read the city's briefs, they're arguing, hey, this is a discovery process. And I think you should admit that it probably is a discovery process, but the statutes allow it to go on. But my question is, even if it is a discovery process, what... How does the city alleviate that problem by subpoenaing the defendant? Even if they subpoena the defendant, it's still a discovery process for you, isn't it?
I concede it's a discovery process, or it can be.
You can still have a de novo trial.
Correct, if you appeal.
And can any of the evidence that was in the municipal court be used in the de novo trial?
No.
So...
You can't cross-examine based upon a document, the transcript?
For evidentiary purposes, yes, but you can't claim it to be the record before the court at this stage.
Well, what I don't... Maybe this is a question more properly put to the Sun Prairie, but if the Sun Prairie's problem is that this is being used as a discovery mechanism, how does allowing the court to subpoena the defendant alleviate that problem?
It doesn't.
Well, it gives discovery to the other side.
That's true, but...
Yeah.
Permitting the court in an inherent authority to order something which is in direct contravention of what a statute permits when it's not essential, for both Your Honor's very reason, you can do this all over again in circuit court. That makes whatever orders that the judge does in direct contravention to a statute or not essential. 814 on the de novo trial virtually wipes out inherent authority because you get to do it all over again, so it's certainly not essential. And if the court is to hold that it is essential, then you need, I think, to get rid of 814.
Mr. Mays, let me get back to the issue of inherent power for a minute and ask you whether or not you feel there's any distinction between the inherent power of a circuit court as against the inherent power of a municipal court. We know that the municipal court is not a court of record. The circuit court is a court of record. Does that make any difference in terms of the inherent power?
No. I think because the way that the courts have stated that in order to have an inherent power or inherent authority, what is being sought to be done has got to be essential. Now, circuit courts are above municipal courts. Municipal courts are not courts of record, which is exactly, by the way, the reason that an interlocutory type appeal, a supervisory writ, was not sought in this case as the city claims should have been done. It's not a court of record. I effectively have to go through this to seek my remedy. But to answer Your Honor's court, no. Circuit courts have inherent power. Municipal courts have inherent power only if that inherent power, without it, would be the court couldn't function. And the city has cited some cases in its brief, specifically In Re Janitor, Supreme Court, Stevenson versus Milwaukee County, and State X Rel Reynolds versus County Court. However, it's hard to believe that there ever existed any law or statute prohibiting the court from selecting its own janitor, the circuit court from appointing a bailiff, or requesting air conditioning in their offices. The point is, on that note, is that the cases cited by the city, none of them demonstrate a court utilizing an inherent power in contravention to an existing statute.
Counsel, I'm concerned about this case because it involves municipal court, high volume. But I'm also concerned about the ramifications of what you are asking, since you are advancing the argument that there's no difference with regard to inherent power analysis for circuit court and municipal courts. Here's my hypothetical. I'm a circuit court judge, and I have a three-week trial coming up. Civil case, and there's no requirement by law that the defendant show up. But I issue an order that the insurance company claims representative appear in person or by phone, because I know that the claims representative, the claims adjuster, is the one that holds the money, and without that person's presence, any kind of pretrial or negotiations that begin at trial are absolutely fruitless. Why can't I do that?
I'm not necessarily saying you can't.
Don't I have inherent authority to do that for the orderly administration of court? This is 3 weeks on my calendar, and it's going to perhaps it should be settled, the case that should be settled, but it won't be settled because someone isn't showing up, and I want them to show up.
I go back to the first statement that I made on this issue, in that an attorney who's going to be appearing, I think, implicitly has the authority to settle, not settle. They've talked with their client. But in hesitation of saying you can do it on a case-by-case basis, that may be a situation where it is essential. Municipal court trials happen all the time. They happen in municipalities throughout the state, hundreds of them, possibly. They've existed for a long time. Justice Dyckman has stated in his dissent that they, in fact, have existed for a long time. The Sun Prairie Municipal Court will not cease to function. I don't also believe that the circuit court would cease to function. It certainly is going to be...
I'm not talking about ceasing to function, but I'm talking about orderly administration of justice. Is your complaint regarding this particular order for appearance or the general nature that it's a standard procedure to have an order for appearance?
Can I just add one thing? That's a typical pretrial settlement order. Somebody has to be there from both sides, or multiple sides.
That holds the money.
That has the authority to settle, because that's the point of that particular meeting. Do you object to that? I mean, is that a standard?
No.
Well, how does it differ from this case?
It differs from this case in that while it may be necessary in the circuit court to the efficient exercise of the court's docket and getting cases like that go through, there's not a statute. 971-04 in the criminal procedure states defendant to be present.
But counsel, that's not answering your question, because you've got a huge hurdle to overcome before you get to the statutes. And that's whether or not there is inherent authority to do this. That's Justice Bradley and Chief Justice's question.
And I guess, to be blunt, I don't think, to answer Justice Bradley's question, that it is necessary to the efficient exercise of the court's docket. I think that if a lawyer shows up on the behalf of a defendant, he has the authority to do that. The court may then want to, as they did in, I believe it was Latham, default or find against them if they can't do that. What's the purpose of having an attorney show up? Why not just order the defendant to show and not an attorney? Because that defendant's certainly going to know a heck of a lot more about settlement, what they're going to take and what they're not going to take. I think, to answer Your Honor's question, it's not necessary to the efficient exercise of the court's docket. The court's not going to cease to function if it doesn't have that power, and so therefore it's not an inherent power, and it can't be done.
Well, can a lawyer just say to the judge, "I'm not interested in settling. We want a trial, and let's go."
Not if he wants that judge to like it.
Well, I'm not talking about like and dislike. I'm talking about a lawyer that's got a backbone that understands that the client has some rights, and then to the judge ought to be independent, impartial, and not use personal prejudice. I mean, I'm assuming that that's the kind of system we have in Wisconsin.
Once you've asked for a trial, and you show up for a trial, it's assumed, I think, that you're going to proceed with a trial. If at that point in time, your person, your client, is not there, I think you're presumed to know that and to be ready to proceed without them. Otherwise, you bring them. The issue about this order only happens where, and I'll be specific in this case, in which myself and Mr. Davis's expert witness appeared, we were ready to go. I knew what Mr. Davis would accept. There had been pretrial conversations. They were rejected. So turning it on a specific case, I knew what was acceptable and what wasn't. And
Mr.
that never
Davis,
occurred.
Can you tell me how, based on your experience, how extensive the use of orders like this would be across Wisconsin?
First one I've ever seen, right here. And I've cited in, I believe, the opening brief, in a footnote, the length of the list of municipal courts which myself and my former firm and associates, to my knowledge, have appeared in. This is the only municipal court that has bothered, to my knowledge, to enter that kind of an order. And again, being specific, I think the purpose was they didn't feel that they could try the case, they could win the case without having the defendant there to ask him questions. They knew I had an expert witness. They knew that that expert witness had testified in many trials before and was very effective, and so they fell back on this type.
But this wasn't the first time, obviously, at least from what I read in the brief, that this had occurred in this particular court.
This particular court has a pre-printed pretrial
right.
conference
and,
order
and,
in which...
And most courts have that. I mean...
Correct. And no other courts have issued such an order.
With the defendant being ordered to be present, if he is present, the city couldn't call him to the stand anyhow, could they?
Sure.
But he's only ordered to be present. The judge didn't say he must testify.
There is a statutory provision in Chapter 800, I forget what it is offhand, which allows anyone present in the courtroom to be called as a witness. So, yes, that's what can happen, and it's unfortunate, and that's exactly what we're seeking to prevent. Make them prove their case without resorting to unlawful orders.
Now, under 802.10.6, which is the circuit court rules, an attorney for each party participating in any pretrial conference shall have the authority to enter stipulations and make admissions regarding all matters that the participants may reasonably anticipate may be discussed. The court may require that a party or the party's representative be present or reasonably available by phone to consider possible settlement of the dispute.
And I notice my time's out. If I can have just a minute to respond. May is the word used there. In the 800.09.2b, it clearly uses the word or. Or, when defined, is to express an alternative between one of among two things. I don't want to get into statutory construction and delving into a lot more issues regarding different statutes, but that is possible. But in municipal court, there isn't such a provision, and I think that it's implied that an attorney who appears on behalf of their client, when their client has asked them to do so, can enter into such trial stipulations without such an order.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes of rebuttal. Richard Nording, you represent the city of Sun Prairie.
May it please the court, my name is Richard Nording. I represent the respondent, City of Sun Prairie, in this case. I believe this case presents the following question. In Wisconsin, when there's a bench trial in a civil case, does the court have authority to order that the defendant be present? Very simple proposition, really. Can the court order that the defendant be present for the defendant's civil trial? And to me, the answer seems almost self-evident. Yes, of course. Would seem to me quite remarkable if a court could not order a defendant to be present. And the city's position is the court has that power, and that power was properly exercised in this case. And I note at the outset, and I believe the prior questioning from the court delved into this a bit, that there's an important point here, which is, since this power derives from the inherent judicial authority of courts, this power either exists for municipal courts and circuit courts, or it exists for neither one. So if the municipal court does not have the power to order the defendant to be present at the trial, then neither will the circuit court. I think that should be kept in mind in resolving this case.
Well, tell me why the court, and let's stay with the municipal for a minute, why the court needs the defendant present.
I don't believe I can improve upon the well-articulated statements from the municipal court judge himself, who stated explicitly five particular reasons which are related to the court's function and the court's business, the court's reasons why the defendant should be present. Number one, that the defendant's presence will promote the prompt administration of justice, because when the defendant is present, then the court knows that someone will be there who has knowledge of the facts and who has authority either to enter into pretrial stipulations that could streamline the case or conceivably could resolve the case entirely without a trial. Now, I know that the argument is made on behalf of Mr. Davis that we should presume that the attorney who's present on Mr. Davis' behalf or on some other defendant's behalf will have all that knowledge and will have all that authority, and that everything will proceed smoothly and just as expeditiously, even if the defendant is not present. But I think this defies the experience and the common sense of those who have been involved in civil trials and those who have been involved as judges in civil cases. The experience that I've seen as a litigator, and that I think many trial judges have seen, both in pretrial conferences and at the outset of trials, is that if the defendant is not present, the attorney does not always know the specific facts necessary to enter into proper stipulations or the specific authority that could be involved in resolving the case. The judge is interested in getting these cases resolved expeditiously. That's part of the judge's job, and the judge's experience is that if the defendant is not present, that becomes more difficult.
You just have a default judgment. Well, you put the case on, the city makes its case, the defendant can't make a defense, that's the end of it. This
yes.
is supposed to be the people's court. What are we doing in pretrial?
It's a possibility, Your Honor, that's what could happen, is that we go ahead and hold the trial, even though the defendant is not present, even though in some cases the defendant, the experience of the court is that the defendant is not really even attempting to prevail at the municipal court and not even presenting its case, that the whole thing is nothing but a dry run and a sham. But I don't think the court has to subject itself to that kind of experience of presiding over a mockery of a trial.
What's a mockery? That's the statute.
Well, Your Honor, in the Brownsdorf case, which I'm sure you recall because you were one of the dissenters, in that case, the suggestion by the four-member majority was that a proper resolution when the assistant district attorney was not prepared to proceed with the case was, well, go ahead and let's have the case, and the state won't be able to prove its case because the district attorney isn't prepared to present the case, and then the case will be resolved. And the dissenters, including yourself, thought that was a very poor idea because it's a bad use of the court system to have these sorts of sham trials, and that's exactly what we're saying here.
Counsel, before you get any further, I think that there is a process we're talking about. The process here is, first of all, you're brought into court, and then as here, there were a series of correspondence between yourself as counsel or whoever and the defendant. There was a pretrial, and ultimately, so I can see that there could be a reason for counsel being present and the defendant not at every other stage except what we're talking about, the final trial stage. And speaking as a trial judge of some 13 years, it would be not only from the inherent power, but just the orderly administration of the court to imagine that a defendant who had been ordered would not appear sort of... I think, are you talking about all appearance? You're talking about the final appearance here, the trial. That's what you jumped into.
Yes.
But there are other appearances that were so noted by the city that they asked that the defendant appear. Now, those are less crucial, aren't they?
That's probably true. The defendant had been ordered to be present at the pretrial and was not present, and neither was defendant's counsel.
Correct. So this was the ultimate, this was it. This was the time for where the rubber hits the road or the time for decision making.
That's true.
And that's why you're saying it's essential at that time that the person that's being charged should make that appearance, whether it's circuit or municipal court.
I think that's the most vital time for the defendant to be present, and I'm speaking here from the perspective of the court. It was the court who wanted the defendant present. Some arguments have been made to the effect that, well, it's really the city or the prosecution that wanted the defendant present, and they're too cheap to subpoena the defendant to be present, but that's not the case at all. The court has experience in many, many, many of these kinds of trials, and in the vast, vast majority, I'm talking now prior to the time that the court decided to issue this kind of an order, and in the vast, vast majority of these cases, the prosecution didn't choose to subpoena a defendant to be present because it's not normally in the prosecution's interest that the defendant be present. When the defendant is present, the defendant can explain why the defendant believes that he's not guilty.
Counsel, I spent a couple of years as a prosecutor in municipal court, and indeed, that was one of the tactics that I would often use and catch them off guard. One of my first witnesses I would call is the defendant to the stand adversely. And they'd kind of think, this is like TV, and I didn't think the defendant had to be going to the stand and being called by the prosecutor. But, of course, since it's a forfeiture violation, the prosecutor can do that. I mean, I use that tactic all the time.
Right, and it's a good tactic, but we've got to distinguish between two things here. If the defendant is present, it may well be that the prosecution would decide, well, the defendant is here, we will call the defendant as an early witness, perhaps the first witness, partly to learn more about the case or partly to learn whether or not the prosecution will need to call an expert witness who's on standby or some other reason like that. But that is a very different question from whether the prosecution would have preferred to have the defendant present in the first place. So I say yes, if the defendant is present, there is a good likelihood that the prosecution may elect to call the defendant to the stand. I'll concede that. But I would also say the prosecution's preference in the vast majority of cases would be that the defendant not be present at all. It's the judge who wanted the defendant present in this case and in these other cases, because the judge's experience is that if the defendant is not present, it's more difficult to have an expeditious presentation or resolution of the case, and more difficult to determine the truth of the matter.
Well, but counsel, we live in an adversarial system. There are other systems of law where the judge, the magistrate, goes out, gets the facts, and compiles the case, and the lawyers have very little to do with it. But we live in an adversarial system, and we don't require a defendant to put up a defense.
True.
Or even a good defense. And although judges can question witnesses, that's rarely done, or not done very frequently, because we think that the parties present the case, right? So I don't understand, and we've only gotten to your first one, the defendant's presence is a prompt administration of justice. If we take it as an adversarial system, I don't see what the judge is doing in terms of the judge deciding the nature of the evidence that should be presented and who should present it?
Well, there's a couple points in response, Your Honor. Number one is, I believe the judge has a responsibility to try to make a determination of the case on the merits.
On the basis of the evidence presented in court by the parties.
Well, that would be a fair statement, and I think that the adversarial system would typically work reasonably well, but there is a clinker that comes into play in municipal court in a number of situations, and one that was one of the judge's reasons for issuing this order, and that is the adversarial system has been turned on its ear in many situations in municipal court where the defendant is not attempting to present a case and not attempting to win the case and is abusing and misusing the court as a discovery device and making a mockery of the court's process, and in the meantime using up the court's time, the court clerk's time, the time of all the other witnesses and the other people involved in the case. That's not a good use of judicial resources.
It may not be, but where do you find that it's an abuse? Point to something. Code of judicial responsibility, a statute. What is it that says you got to put up a defense and you can't just listen to the evidence?
Well, I guess I would have to say, Your Honor, that it's an abuse, and it would be an abuse in the view of any judge who had to preside over such proceedings. The municipal courts were not created in order to have these mock or sham proceedings presented in front of them, where the judge is being asked to sit through the presiding over a deposition. And I might add that there is an incentive at the municipal court for the defendant to lose. And that incentive is that if the defendant loses, the defendant can appeal to the circuit court and get a trial de novo, and it is only the appellant going to circuit court who can demand a jury trial. And so if the defendant wants a jury trial in circuit court, they have every incentive only to lose at the municipal court, because if they win, the city could appeal, and then the defendant could not ask for the jury.
Can the city appeal?
Sure.
To municipal court.
And the defendant doesn't have the right to ask for the jury trial, huh?
Only the appellant to the circuit court has the right
statutory?
To ask. Yes.
Mr. Harding, I believe that 814, the appeal right, goes back to the 1977 session of the legislature. Municipal courts have come a very long way since that time. If you lose this case, do you think it's possible that 814 will be revised?
It's conceivable that there is a legislative remedy if this case should be lost on behalf of the city. But I think that the proper resolution of this kind of case is to recognize that this order is not unlike many other kinds of orders that this court and other courts have recognized as being the type that is within the inherent judicial authority of courts, and that is the proper way to determine what is the source of power for this kind of order.
Mr. Norton, this was a OWI case, an operating while under the influence case.
Yes.
Is this the only type of case where the judge in Sun Prairie issues such an order?
No. The judge issues these orders in all of the ordinance prosecution cases that are in front of the court. And I might note that along the way here that there might be some situations where it would be overly burdensome on a defendant to comply with this order, or where the defendant may be able to make a case that the specifics of a particular case do not justify or warrant the defendant's being present.
What's the remedy if that happens?
Simply apply to the court for relief from the order and show to the court what the reasons are, and I think we can assume that the court will consider those and properly respond.
Was that done here?
No. No, in this case, there was no such claim of hardship, no such claim that there's anything about the case that made the order inappropriate to the case. The only claim from the outset by the defendant has been that the court is absolutely without power to issue this order in any circumstance whatsoever. And that's simply not the case.
Mr. Norton, are you concluded with your answer?
Yes, I have.
I want to switch just a little bit about the effect of finding an inherent authority. On page 6 of the Court of Appeals, and this is what I was trying to get at with Mr. Mays. On page 6 of the Court of Appeals opinion, Judge Rogensack says, she finds that there is an inherent power. She says, therefore, the order were proper exercises of the court's inherent powers. But then she goes on, unless there is a statutory impediment to ordering a civil litigant to be present at trial. Now, is that a correct statement of the law?
No.
If there's an inherent authority, then a statute cannot override that, can it?
Typically, a statute would not be able to override the inherent authority, particularly if the inherent authority deals with the heart of judicial authority, which I believe would be the ability of a judge to control the proceedings in front of the court in order to fairly and promptly administer justice. There might be some situations in which, if there were a statute contrary to the order that comity...
Well, let's assume that there is a statute. The statute says the municipal court judge shall not issue a subpoena to a defendant. Let's assume there's a statute that says municipal court judge shall not issue a subpoena to a defendant in a civil action. So we don't have the problems of interpretation. I mean, it's clear. And yet we find that there is inherent authority in the municipal court. Need we consider that statute?
I think the answer is that where the inherent authority deals with matters that are at the heart of the judicial power, which I believe this would be the case, then the statute cannot trump the inherent authority. As a matter of comity, sometimes it is a determination in that situation to try to have the judiciary accommodate what the legislative proscription is. Now, in this particular case, there is not a statute that prohibits or prescribes or prevents the court from issuing an order requiring that the defendant be present.
Counsel, one of my concerns is you talk about inherent authority necessary to the proper functioning of the court. Isn't there a difference between the function of municipal court and circuit court? I think of the bread and butter, and I think of like the people's court as municipal court. And the bread and butter of municipal court, I think, were speeding charges. And lo and behold, a lot of the speeders, at least in the area that I live, were people from, just like this person, from Illinois, passing on through. People that didn't live in the area. I mean, it's kind of the nature of driving a vehicle. Some of the people will be local, some won't be. And so the idea that for a speeding charge, a person that lives in, if you live, in Sun Prairie, and you've got someone who lives in Shell Lake, or you have someone who lives in Vesper, or you have someone who lives in Hillsboro, they have to come to Sun Prairie, why can't they just hire a local attorney and have them take care of that? Why should someone have to come from Illinois for a 3-point speeding charge?
Well, you've raised the question in a context that I addressed very, very briefly earlier, which was to say there may be some circumstances where the order could present a hardship to a defendant in a particular case. And if so, there's no reason why the defendant cannot apply for relief from the order. And I think the judge would then consider the circumstances, consider what presentation has been made as to whether there's a hardship, and if appropriate, give relief from the order. But that's not the situation that we have here. This defendant never asked for relief, never indicated that they needed relief, never to this day have said that, and instead just say this court did not have the authority to ask the defendant, or require that the defendant be present.
Counsel, suppose the court orders the defendant in, the defendant comes. The city doesn't call him as a witness. They're concerned about the defendant, and they want to make the case, and they don't need him. Now it's the defense turn,
and they don't call him as a witness. So it's as if he's not there. Can the court call him?
Yes.
And is that the intent here, that the court will then be able to call the witness so that the court gets the whole story and then can make up its mind on the basis of the whole record presented? I mean, that's what you said is the first purpose.
I believe that a trial court judge, whether it's municipal court or otherwise, typically will hear the testimony presented by the parties, which may or may not have included testimony from the defendant, and then the trial court judge will probably ask himself or herself two questions. Is there some important subject matter that for some reason or that I believe is necessary or important for me to decide this case that has not been touched upon by the evidence? And if the judge feels there's some important subject matter that's required to resolve this case or for he or she to decide the case properly, I think the court would ask questions of that witness in order to delve into that subject matter. Or it may be...
So the court would call, say, the court's calling the witness, swear him in, and the court would ask the witness questions.
That's correct. And it may be that that a party was put on the stand and or not, but that the testimony on a particular topic, although the topic has been covered, the testimony is not clear to the court and needs further elucidation in order for the court to properly resolve the case or to decide the case. And so the court may decide that it appears that it is the defendant who has the information necessary for the court to properly decide the case, and the court would ask the defendant the appropriate questions. The court is in the business of seeking out the truth and deciding the case justly. And I do not think that there is anything unfair or improper about the court asking a defendant, you know, the defendant decided to have a trial. The defendant decided to say, I am not guilty. The defendant required that the judge be there to preside over a trial and that all the other parties attend. I do not think there is anything wrong with the judge saying to the defendant, why is it that you say you are not guilty? Particularly if there's been a prima facie case made that the defendant is guilty and no defense has been presented.
Counsel, when I get back to the nature of the municipal court, we've had Milwaukee and we have Sun Prairie, we have a number of municipal courts. A lot of municipal courts are retired school teacher who's the judge, who holds court on Tuesday mornings in the library in Vesper, Wisconsin. And of course, our rules apply to all, if we don't make any distinction between municipal courts and the nature of municipal courts and circuit courts, they apply across the board to big as well as little, to formal as well as informal. So you're saying that this relatively informal procedure in the library in Vesper, Wisconsin, the municipal court judge, is going to be able to require people from all around the state to show up at the trial on the speeding charges so that he can ask them some questions at trial. Seems real problematic. And one of the things I did as a circuit court judge is we used to sit at almost like municipal court judges. We'd ride the circuit and go to these libraries and we'd go to these fire stations and we'd hold what was tantamount to municipal court for these small municipalities, about 10 of them in Marathon County. And the idea that it just seems problematic to me.
Well, I understand the concern that you are raising, but I do not think that there is good reason to believe that this authority is going to be abused. That's really, or misused.
Well, your strongest argument is that the trial court, or the trial is being abused.
That's true.
I mean,
but
I don't
we don't have any... The
widespread authority that they're being abused by using these as trials? I don't know.
No, I'm saying that... The municipal courts of the state have been in operation for a long, long time. and including the kind that you described, and that the that I venture to say municipal courts have been fashioning orders under inherent judicial authority for a long, long time. Not many of them reach this court. But I think that in and of itself is probably evidence that, that this power is wisely used by judges. It's wisely used by circuit court judges and by municipal court judges. And there's no reason to suspect, I don't think, that upholding this order here is going to lead to some sort of widespread abuse of inherent authority by municipal judges or other judges around the state. The municipal judges are subject to CLE requirements just like other judges are.
It will lead to widespread use of a order for appearance. Your opposing counsel says this is the only municipal court that I'm not sure that's accurate.
It's not true that this is the only municipal court that issues these orders. There are others, and I think they were cited in our briefs, but there's several others in Dane County that I know of. And not only that, this same kind of order is currently being issued by the circuit courts in Dane County in traffic cases. And Mr. Mays knows this because he's been involved in several, including one where the Dane County Circuit Court judge ordered his client to be present at the trial in an OWI case, and Mr. Mays refused to have his client obey the order, and the circuit court judge entered default judgment against his client just the same way the municipal judge did here. And the the Dane County Circuit Court judges have this as a standing order in their traffic court cases these days. They seem to have found it appropriate for the fair and efficient administration of justice in their courts, just as some municipal courts have, to have this kind of order issued. I don't know whether these orders are going to become widespread, but they are used in some other courts, including the circuit courts, and if we strip that authority away from this court, we're going to be stripping it away from the circuit courts, too. I don't think that's appropriate. I'm also glad that you raised the point about the nature of municipal courts around the state. The figures from 1997, as reported by the Director of Courts, indicates that for the courts that were reporting, and this was not all courts, the municipal courts in this state handled 524,000 plus cases. And if we add on some additional courts that weren't included in this compilation, it reaches almost 600,000 cases. These are busy courts. They need the power to control their dockets in such a way as to fairly and efficiently manage the cases in front of them.
Why not just have the district or the city attorney issue a subpoena?
Well, because the city attorney most times doesn't want the defendant there. It's the judge who wanted the defendant there. It's the judge who is most concerned about fairly and efficiently managing his own caseload. The city attorney is mostly concerned, not just concerned, but mostly concerned about trying to convict the parties or the defendants. And it's usually not in the city attorney's interest to subpoena the defendant into court for that reason. In Dane County alone, there were 44,000 municipal court cases handled in 1997, and of those, over 1,300 were OWI cases. And these are cases which, for the most part, because they are being handled in municipal court, normally do not have to be handled in the circuit courts. But if we do not recognize the authority of a municipal court to efficiently and properly handle the cases and the heavy caseload in that court, one of the bad side effects could be more of these cases are going to end up spilling over into circuit court and thereby further clogging those courts. So I would ask that this court should recognize the inherent authority of the municipal court as being the same as the inherent authority of trial courts and to affirm the order in this case.
Could I ask you two quick questions? Is there any reference to municipal courts in the Constitution?
Yes. The municipal courts were the Constitution established the uniform court system in the state of Wisconsin by a very simple statement to the effect that the judicial power of the state is vested in one uniform court system. That is really the mechanism whereby inherent judicial authority was vested in all the courts of the state.
Well, right, it says, that's 7-2, it says the judicial power of the state is vested in a unified system, and that includes a municipal court if authorized by the legislature.
Exactly.
Section 14.
That's right, and I was just going to say that.
14 deals with municipal courts.
I was just going to say that, Your Honor, that the uniform court system in the state is then described to include the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, the Circuit Court, any other trial courts uniform throughout the state as created by the legislature, and the municipal courts, provided that the legislature takes action to authorize them under Article 14, which it has.
And would you say the inherent power that you advocate would apply in any municipal court, irrespective of size?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Norting. Mr. Mays, you have a few minutes of rebuttal time.